God, grant me the serenity,
to accept the things I cannot change,
the courage to change the things I can,
the wisdom to
know the difference. Simple Actions, the Simple Actions group wishes to extend to newcomers. Is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you. Anyone can use the chat function to send their phone number to the newcomer private. All right, not seeing any hands up. I will read the preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we are discussing steps 8 and 9. Please welcome our panel this evening. We have Mary Beth from Richmond and Merv L. from Charlottesville. I will read the first paragraph. This is actually what we call steps 8 and 9, part one, based on the paragraphs excerpts from the big book. I will read the first paragraph, and then the panel will share for a few minutes each on the reading, and I will put those up on the screen. All right. Steps 8 and 9, part one, section one, page 76. Now we need more action, without which we find that faith without works is dead. Let's look at steps 8 and 9. We have made a list of all persons we had harmed and to whom we are willing to make amends. We made it when we took inventory. We subjected ourselves to a drastic self-abrasion. Now we go out to our fellows and repair the damage done in the past. We attempt to sweep away the debris which has accumulated out of our effort to live on self-will and run the show ourselves. If we haven't the will to do this, we ask until it comes. Remember, it was agreed at the beginning we would go to any lengths for victory over alcohol. And Mary Beth, I believe you said you wanted to go first.
Yes, happy to. So I'm Mary Beth. I'm an alcoholic. Thanks for having me tonight. whenever I think about inventory, I think about house cleaning. And, as they said, we made this list of all persons we had harmed when we took inventory. And in the end, my 8-step list ended up being longer than just what the people that were in my inventory. But as the book says, everyone on my inventory pretty much was also on my 8-step list. And when I think about kind of the idea of house cleaning, which ironically I did today in preparation for family coming for the holidays, it's a lot of in 4 and 5, you're taking out all your stuff, you're unpacking the closet, you're going through that room where you've just been shoving all the junk and you got to actually like pull it out to get rid of it. Right. And you have to look at each piece and be like, do I give this away? Do I keep this? Is it trash? And you got to kind of look at each piece. So you've just done all of that. But as we approach, 8 and 9, as it says, we have to go out and repair the damage done in the past. It's like, again, if all I did was 4 and 5, like I've just pulled everything out of the closet, right? And I've made piles, right? And like, I haven't actually like gotten rid of the junk. And I also haven't like done whatever repairs are underneath. Are there walls that need to be repainted, right? Is there, are there projects behind the piles that I need to like follow through with to actually get my house back into the order that I want it to be, where I want to be in that space? And so, it seemed really scary when it was said to me that basically, oh, hey, guess what? The people you wrote about in the 4th step and that you talked to me about in the 5th step, these are people that, you probably need to make amends to. And that seemed really hard. But anyway, every time I think about, we attempt to sweep away the debris which has accumulated out of our efforts to live on self-will and run the show ourselves. And so whenever I'm trying to understand spiritual stuff, if I can tie it back into things that I know in my tangible world, it makes me more open to doing them in the spiritual world. So again, thinking about it, what I do when I do try to actually like clean out the closet or clean out the clutter, if I understand ultimately to really get my house back into working order. I've got to do this next hard thing, and that they are in fact separate processes. It makes it easier. And the last thing I'll say is just, you know, that I love how they say that we haven't the will to do this. We ask until it comes. And that's such a beautiful thing that if you, you know, if you arrive at 8 and 9 and you're like, ugh, no, we can pray for the willingness to be willing, and that's okay. Right. But if I'm honestly praying for the willingness to be willing, like, I'm right where I need to be. And it doesn't say you can only do it for 5 days or a week or 30 days or 6 months. Like, it just says to do it. Right. And if that's where I am, that's where I am. And that's okay. And I'll pass.
Thanks, Mary Beth. Merv.
Hi, Merv. And I'm an alcoholic.
Merv.
Sobriety date is June 1st, 2001. My home group is the Common Solution Group in Charlottesville, Virginia. Have a sponsor, and I sponsor guys, and I work with the difference who are, and then just hang out here and you'll figure that out. For me, like I'm just going to do a different approach. Like for me, like whenever I think about, you know, the willingness that they're asking you for in the eighth step, you know, like if I look back at the process, man, like the consequences of alcohol, like that stuff, the first step, man, it was a driving force. Like, man, like by the time I started my inventory, I was just like, you bet, you know, like, I just don't want to get back there. Right. And that weight and that, you know, I don't know, that terror of like drinking again, like got me through like a lot of amends. But I just wanted to touch on something because I had a conversation earlier today with somebody about this, which is like, you know, what happens when you stall out in amends in sobriety? And I had that, you know, so like the willingness for me, like, you know, was it always the first step? Was it the first step after 5 years of sobriety? Because I'll tell you, Brian's on here, and Brian was part of this crew back in the day. Like, there was a point in time where I was sponsoring all these guys in Charlottesville, and I'm walking around, and for some reason in my life at that point, I had a child, the mom couldn't work. Money became very important to me because it was now my money. And what I ended up doing I made all my amends except for 3 key financial amends. And now it's like, you know, year 6, year 7, and I'm having trouble with, you know, like all of a sudden the fear of financial insecurity is on me. Everything has a dollar sign on it. And I can't understand like what's wrong with me. And, you know, I talked to my sponsor, who a lot of you guys know, and he's just like, well, you know, maybe if you finish your amends, maybe that'll lighten up. And he knew because my sponsor had guided me through my 8-step list, along with like a lot of amends. And so like I had these 3, and, you know, and the big one was the IRS. Sandy Beach tells this story, and I heard it in early sobriety, how Alcoholics Anonymous will rewrite your past. And I'll tell you, like, I kind of knew what he was talking about, but I didn't know what he was talking about till I knew what he was talking about. And here I am, right? Since I've been 19 years old, I thought that the IRS overpaid me $1,000. And I'm waiting for the IRS police to come and lock me up. You know, like, Mr. Lingle, we've tracked you down. You never paid that money you owed us because we overpaid you, and now we're going to haul you away. And, you know, and I'm just like, good Lord, you know, like, I don't want to make that amends. And well, this period of time comes around where I get all these new guys at the same time. And I'm reading the book. And now these guys are like, they're going out and they're making amends. And we read that part, and we're going to talk about it a little bit later. But, you know, we must lose our fear of facing our creditors, or we are liable to drink again. And I read that sentence with 3 different sponsees within, and it became very apparent to me that I need to make these. Now, the willingness for me, you know, like, it was a lot about like, man, these guys, I got to do this so these guys don't jump out ahead of me. You know, like, there was a lot of ego involved, but it was really, once again, the need that I had to finish this process to drink. And the funny part about the story is, you know, after getting 2 double cheeseburgers in the line at Burger King, I call the IRS up and I'm like, I owe you guys $1,000 from like 1989. And they transferred me to 3 different people till they finally get somebody on the line. And they're like, Mr. Lingle, in 1989, there was a tax credit issued. You got the right amount. And we would like you to stop calling us. And I was kind of mad because I wanted a really good share story, you know, about how I called the IRS and I paid them the money back on the spot. But the funny thing is how many years was I living in a mm-hmm. false reality until like finally I heard, and I guess that's all I got. Thanks.
Thanks, Merv. All right, I'll put up the next reading. Section 2, page 76. Probably there are still some misgivings. As we look over the list of business acquaintances and friends we have hurt, we may feel a little diffident about going to them on a spiritual basis. Let us be reassured. To some people, we need not and probably should not emphasize the spiritual feature on our first approach. We might prejudice them. At the moment, we are trying to put our lives in order, but this is not an end in itself. Our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. It is seldom wise to approach an individual who still smarts from our injustice to him and announce that we have gone religious. In the prize ring, this would be called leading with the chin. Why lay ourselves open to being branded fanatics or religious bores? We may kill a future opportunity to carry a beneficial message, but our man is sure to be impressed with a sincere desire to set right the wrong. He is going to be more interested in a demonstration of goodwill than in our talk of spiritual discovery. All right, Mary Beth.
All right. Thank you, Merv. That was awesome. That's a great story of, sorry to crosstalk, but I appreciate the story of, again, that line of, we squander the time that might have been worthwhile. And every time I think of fear, it's me squandering time that might have been worthwhile. So in this next paragraph, and I didn't give you guys my full intro. Sorry, I'm Mary Beth. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is March 23rd, 2009. I have a home group as well. It is the Eyeopener group. It's at 7:30 a.m. on Saturdays in Richmond, if you're ever interested. And I'm also sponsored and am grateful to be able to sponsor as well. So probably there are still some misgivings. Yes, did not really care to even put everyone on the 8-step list that my sponsor thought I should put on the list. But she made her recommendation and I took it. And yeah, so there were some people that I really like wasn't like, really, come on. But you know, that's why it's such a blessing to get to do this with wise counsel, right? People that maybe see things a little bit differently than we do. And I love too that they talk about how, you know, when I was drinking, and still it's a little bit my character, but it's not as much now, but like, I love to word vomit, right? Like I love to tell you everything, tell you all the details, like, you know, and the thought of having to go and explain to somebody who maybe wasn't fully acquainted, you know, somebody from like 10 years ago, I'm thinking of this one amends in particular. And she, I'm sure, knew I had a drinking problem, but I don't know that she knew the extent of it or had any idea that I had gotten sober or whatever. And it would have been awkward probably for both of us if I had approached her out of nowhere and like given her the whole story of like how it is that I happened to be like reaching out to her to talk about like some really ugly things that I did to her in the past, right? But that wasn't what I needed to do, right? And that's what this paragraph, you know, sort of tells me is that really I'm going out to get my house in order, not for me, right? They say, but because I'm trying to achieve my real purpose, which is to fit myself to be of maximum service to God and the people about us, right? And so I'm not going to her to tell her all the gory details of how it got worse, like, you know, post high school. And I'm not going to her to, you know, tell her how hard I'm working to get sober and what that looks like. And here's what my spiritual life looks like today. Like, I'm not going to her to tell her that, right? I'm not, because A, as they say, I'm like setting myself up to be, you know, branded as, you know, a fanatic or religious bore, right? Which might close her eyes off or close her ears up, right? If I come at her with things that sound weird and bizarre and she doesn't understand, but it's like, that's not the point, right? I'm going to her to own up to the exact nature of my wrongs, right? And to try to set right what I can because I had wronged her, because I had harmed her. And that was so freeing, you know, because I think left to my own devices, right? If it was just me against the world, me without sponsorship, trying to sort through the wreckage of my past, trying to discover the exact nature of my wrongs, trying to figure out who I needed to reach out to make things right. Like I would have really messed it up. I would have probably never done it, right? But like, I would have really messed it up. But, you know, having a sponsor who talked me through, you know, how to approach someone. What does that look like? How do you call someone out of the blue and like tell them like, hey, you know, like been doing a lot of soul searching and really come to realize that I did wrong by you in the past. And I'd love to get coffee and just kind of talk to you more if you're open to it. Like that was so helpful because I couldn't figure that out on my own. And, you know, in my experience with her, she was interested in my demonstration of goodwill. Right. And that was, and in that, you know, like I was relieved of shame that I'd been carrying around, you know, for Merv, it's fear of the IRS. For me, it was the shame, my behavior that caused me to like hide from people in the grocery store. Right. Like, and I'm just, again, I'm so grateful that someone helped me figure out how to actually make the approach so that I could put my life in order and ultimately fit myself to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. I'll pass.
Thanks, Mary Beth. And Merv?
I appreciate your share, Mary Beth. That was awesome. I ain't gonna lie, this time of year is like a little weird for me. And it was 20 years ago, like this week, like where, you know, I gumptioned enough money to get a bus ride home. You know, I remember going to my sponsor and being like, hey, you know what? I got a couple of bucks. I'm going to go home for Christmas and I'm going to pay back for all the porn I stole, you know? And he was just like, hold on there, cowboy, you know, who's all going to be at your house? And I was like, all three of my sisters, my mom, and he was just like, why don't you go home and practice being a good kid? Why don't you practice being a good brother? If there's something that needs to be done, why don't you be the first in line? So that means all the dishes, you hold the door open for your mom, you're carrying everything from the car to, and, you know, and I understood what he was saying. It's like, oh, ho, ho, we're talking about the stuff I do after the amends, right? You know, like consistent behaviors, you know, and he was like, yeah, you got me, smart guy. But what I want you to do is instead of like going back and running your family ragged, why don't you show them what a spiritual like and do, which is not be focused on what you want, but be focused. And, you know, and it sunk in, you know, so I went home and, you know, and I made amends to my three sisters and, you know, I asked them all the questions and their only reply was just don't die. And, you know, and then I had to make it to my dad, right? You know, and there's the old adage in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, if you want to get off the hook, you got to let them off the hook first. And, you know, and my dad through a very thorough inventory was almost all off the hook. But whenever I made amends to him, you know, like he didn't really want to hear about too much because he thought I was like into God, like he didn't understand Alcoholics Anonymous and he thought I was just going to preach. So he kind of was trying to shut me down and I respected what he was doing, but I just told him, you know, I said, hey, you know what? I'm going to be there for you, you know? And this is a guy who didn't want me to come home to Pennsylvania. And he turned to me and he said, Merv, I just love you. And I hope you find what you're. So like, you know, those consistent actions, those other centered actions, those demonstrations of goodwill, like my sponsor was like, okay, that amends is just the seed of something that's going to grow. It's the consistent actions you take afterwards. That's where you're going to find the stuff you like talk about. So I did, man. I made all my phone calls. I did all that stuff. And I'd go home and I'd see him. And I was always there to help him and do all this stuff. And, you know, and it just, all of a sudden, it just became who I was. I became a son to my father. And that's all he ever. And, you know, when we talk about, you know, the part about what our real purpose is, you know, I think that's it. Is not to be there, not to be the guy running the show in my dad's life anymore. Or if he comes up and he wants to be a dad, shutting him down and telling him what a terrible human he is. It's to let him be who he is and love him. You know, and I'll tell you, and what Alcoholics Anonymous has done and what good sponsors is this. It took the guy who wasn't almost allowed to go home for his first Christmas in sobriety. And then when, you know, it came point in time where my dad made power return. And the reason he did it was is because he knew nobody else would have the guts to pull the plug. So when I went up there, you know, Christmas, when he was on life support and I had to pull the, and I had to like take him off life support on, you know, I mean, that was an act of being in service to my father. And I'm not saying to get like pats on the back. You know, we think that alcoholics is all about us, but really in the long game, man, there's a whole lot more people safer from us. And then all of a sudden we take that power that we get here. And it's not ours to keep, but it's ours to help God's. And that's it. Thanks.
All right. Thanks, Merv. I'll put the next reading up. Section 3, page 77. We don't use this as an excuse for shying away from the subject of God. When it will serve any good purpose, we are willing to announce our convictions with tact and common sense. The question of how to approach the man we hated will arise. It may be he has done us more harm than we have done him, and though we may have acquired a better attitude toward him, we are still not too keen about admitting our faults. Nevertheless, with a person we dislike, we take the bit in our teeth. It is harder to go to an enemy than to a friend, but we find it much more beneficial to us. We go to him in a helpful and forgiving spirit, confessing our former ill will, ill feeling, and expressing our regret. Okay. Mary Beth.
All right. I am, okay, still unmuted. Okay. So I love this, you know, how I said in the paragraph prior, when I approached this one woman in particular, you know, who was by far my hardest amends and the one I'll talk about again. But I talked about how, you know, I didn't give her the whole story of like why it was I was calling her out of the blue. And because it wasn't necessary in that approach. But I love how they say that even though you don't necessarily need to emphasize the spiritual piece, and for some people that will prejudice them, shut them down, confuse them, like there are times that, again, you know, I would be wrong to shy away from the subject of God, right? And I don't always know when that is, right? And that's the beauty of trying to live a life whereby, you know, every day, like I try to make myself be of maximum service to like God and his kids. And just trust that if I feel that little nudge or I hear that little still small voice tell me like to open up and like, you know, be real with where I am and how I got here, that that's my time to do it, right? Because when it serves a good purpose, I do. I love to share the story of my recovery, the story of my spiritual journey. Going back to that woman that was so hard for me, you know, I had truly hated her, right? And I had like recruited other people to hate her. And it was ugly. And she definitely hadn't done me more harm than I'd done her. I didn't feel that way, but the shame was intense. And I hated her because I was jealous of her because she had what I wanted, right? And I was not too keen about admitting my faults because I was embarrassed, ashamed, right? I wasn't angry at her. I was totally ashamed of my behavior. And she was by far the hardest amends for me to make. And I remember, when I knew, I bet it was all in one day. I don't know for sure, but I remember being in the parking garage, going into school, riddled with fear. And because I'm in, you know, I'd done the 8-step, right? I'd made the list, written the names down. And I knew that meant if you write the names down, then you like start praying for the willingness to actually like make the amends. And so I knew I was moving into 9, and I'm sure I'd made some amends by that point, but this one still hadn't been done yet. And it was like gripping me with fear, right? Because it was coming, right? And it was the name on my list. And it was the one that, again, the reason that I would duck and hide from people in the grocery store and in Target was because of this one thing. And, or this one person, not because of her, because of my behavior. But I remember just that visceral fear and calling my sponsor, and like one of the biggest gifts she ever gave me, one of many, but a huge one, was this little prayer. And, you know, it's just her take on something in Big Book, but, you know, it's, God, please remove the fear and show me who you'd have me be and who you'd have me help. And she's like, say it on repeat. And I did, and I still do. It's a great mantra, you know? And sometimes it's not fear, it's remove the shame, remove the guilt, remove the dread, whatever it is. But that first time it was, God, please remove the fear and show me who you'd have me be and who you'd have me help. God, please remove the fear and show me who you'd have me be and who you'd have me help. God, please remove the fear and show me who you'd have me be and who you'd have me help. And calm me down enough to walk out of the garage, to go to class, and to get the courage to make the call to this woman that I needed to talk to. And I remember when I picked up the phone to try to arrange to meet with her, I mean, I felt my heart in my throat. It was up here. I haven't felt it that intense like since. Like, it was so scary to call her to make that approach. And because I knew the exact nature of my wrongs, plus I love to be the best at being the worst, so it was probably like pretty intense. Wasn't maybe as bad as I thought it was, but it was bad. And you know, it was harder to go to an enemy than a friend. It was a lot easier to approach my family and my friends that I still had relationships with, but to go to this person that I hadn't talked to and I'd been hiding from for like 10 years was scary. And so I'll pause.
All right. Thanks, Mary Beth. Merv?
Thanks, Mary Beth. I so identify with what you shared about gathering allies, you know, and oh my God. And just to kind of segue, you know, that Christmas that I was home, man, I had one of those, that was the big one for me, was my mom, right? Because all growing up, you know, like my mom would pull disappearing acts and end up in a psych ward. And, you know, I caught my mom doing things that moms aren't supposed to do. And, you know, and I had three older sisters and, you know, I mean, we were all victims of bad parenting, you know? And I mean, we all bought each other's crap all the time. And me being the youngest, you know, like when my sisters all split, you know, it was, and my dad like had enough. He moved to Philadelphia and it was just me and my mom. And I had no problem letting her know what a horrible mother she was. Mm-hmm. And that, like, that ripped at me, you know, like I believed it, but man, there was something inside of me that just knew that I was a loser, you know, for even uttering those words. And I went home for that Christmas and I'll tell you, like, I still like, you know, I mean, all that stuff, you know, like that I saw and, you know, where was she? Why did I have to learn how to cook at 10? You know, like all that stuff was still on my plate and I didn't want to make that amends. And it was about, I'd probably say about 3 or 4 hours before, you know, dad was going to pack me up in the car and drive me back to Virginia from Pennsylvania that I knew I had to do it. I just knew it. I didn't want to go back to Virginia and not make that amends and tell my sponsor I didn't make it because that was the one, right? Mm-hmm. So I ended up pulling her aside and, you know, and I just mumble like, hey, I was just want to get things clear so I don't get drunk and I was a horrible kid, blah, blah, blah. You know, like my heart wasn't in it. And then she stopped me and she was just like, Merv, if I would have raised you better, maybe you would have turned out better. And I was like, whoa. And it like, it struck me like, oh my God, you know, she bought my stuff. And I ended up like pulling her aside. And I was like, mom, I said, you did the best job you could with what you had. I said, man, I was a rotten, selfish kid. And that stuff that came out of my mouth should have never came. And, you know, and for some reason, there was something that happened in that moment. And what happened in that moment is I come to realize, because I see it a lot more now because my eyes are open to it, is that the amends process for a lot of people will heal the person across from you just as much as, and I'll tell you, like, whenever I saw that and then it like, you know, it changed our relationship. And after years of that, I would be there taking those consistent actions and it would just chisel away until finally there was nothing separating. And the thing is like, my sisters never got that. My sisters never got that. When my mom was in a home and she was basically, you know, she only had like, you know, a little bit of time left to live. I went back home and my three sisters were there and they were like, hey, she's probably not going to recognize you. She's talking gibberish nonsense. You know, just go in and say what you got to say. And I walk in that room and I'm like, hi, mom. And she became lucid just like that. And she was like, Merv. And I was just like, yeah. And we talked. And the thing that she asked me to do was just tell her she was a good mom again. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you're a great mom. And the thing is like when she died 2 days later, I realized that, you know, God and Alcoholics Anonymous gave me, and that they didn't, my sisters never captured, which is forgive. Because I'm always building a case against somebody, something. Like in the back of my mind, like today, I'm at a new job. I don't know what I'm doing. Man, I catch myself building cases against people. And then all of a sudden, if that goes unattended, man, I'm going to believe my own disillusion. So, you know, for me, like, you know, I'll never forget that experience. And thanks for letting me share.
Thanks, Merv. All right, I'll put the next reading up. Section 4, page 77. Under no condition do we criticize such a person or argue. Simply, we tell him that we will never get over drinking until we have done our utmost to straighten out the past. We are there to sweep off our side of the street, realizing that nothing worthwhile can be accomplished until we do so, never trying to tell him what he should do. His faults are not discussed. We stick to our own. If our manner is calm, frank, and open, we will be gratified with the result. In 9 cases out of 10, the unexpected happens. Sometimes the man we are calling upon admits his own fault, so feuds of years standing melt away in an hour. Rarely do we fail to make satisfactory progress. Our former enemies sometimes praise what we are doing and wish us well. Occasionally, they will offer assistance. It should not matter, however, if someone does throw us out of his office. We have made our demonstration, done our part. It's water over the dam. All right, Mary Beth.
Thank you. All right, so I love this reminder, you know, and of we're there to sweep up our side of the street, right? So if I'm not in a place where I can approach this person and own up to my side of the street, and only my side of the street, I'm not ready, right? I got more fourth and fifth step to do. and, you know, it's, I'm not going to discuss the other person's faults, right? I'm going to stick to my own. And it's hard because sometimes there are these moments of reconciliation. And I think obviously if people want to go deeper with us and discuss their side too, you know, I can listen to that, right? I can respect that. I can hear that, but like, I don't get to add to that, right? It's not why I'm there, right? And this is something that, you know, I would say I put more into practice in my day-to-day life now, more so than when I went and did my first amends. But, you know, it's really hard when I have been hurt by the other person. It's really hard when they got a side of the street too. But it's just always a great reminder that when I am really ready to own up to the exact nature of my wrongs, I need to make sure I'm ready to only own up to the exact nature of my wrongs. And if I'm still taking the other person's inventory, I'm not ready. And I have more writing to do and more prayer. The last thing I'll say from these two paragraphs that I've always just, you know, is it odd or is it God? That woman I was telling you about, we never met for coffee. She didn't want to meet and talk, or maybe she didn't feel like it was necessary. I don't know. But I left her, you know, a voicemail, kind of felt like I had to explain why I was calling, you know, and which was roughly, again, like I've been looking over my past and I realized like some of the, you know, I've realized the wrong I've done to you. And I would just love the chance to make things right. If you're open to it, like, let me know if you'd like to get coffee. And she called me back. Right. And God, like, it wasn't as bad when she called me back as when I had to call her, but like, I couldn't answer it. Right. Like I saw her phone ringing through on my phone and I was just like paralyzed. Like, is she going to call me and like cuss me out? Why are you calling me? Like, she left a voicemail and I don't remember most everything she said, but she said, it's water under the bridge. And I always love that this says it's water over the, and it still blows my mind that that's how she closed it, right? She said it's water under the bridge. And again, it was just such a wonderful little like God wink in that moment that like, it was done. You know, this thing, this feud of years standing, it melted away in a voicemail because I got over myself. And God did remove the fear and he did show me what to do. And I was so free. I passed.
Thanks, Mary. All right, Mark.
Thanks, Mary Beth. That was great. And I'm just chuckling because if our manner is calm, frank, and open, we will be gratified with the result. I got a kid I sponsor. He's 19 years old. Right now, he called me right before this meeting started. He's on his way to drive like 2 hours to make amends to his dad. And this is a big deal for him, you know, because like a lot like my own situation, you know, he wasn't like, and, you know, and he has like a lot of ammo against his dad. So like, this was the discussion we had. I said, look, you know, he's just like, I don't know, like what's going to happen, you know? And I said, look, if your manner is calm, frank, and open, you're going to be gratified with him. I said, you know, the protocol, you know, the questions to ask. You also have a, you know, a backup plan just in case. And, you know, and the thing is like, I tell them all the time, you know, it's just like, when you get through that, you know, like what's going to happen is you're going to like, you know, you talk about trusting God, but what's going to happen is now you're going to have, and, you know, it's easy for me to trust God when everything's going my way. But whenever I'm staring down the barrel of a gun, especially the judgment of my dad that I haven't seen in so long, man, there's got to be something in the car with me on the drive down there. And And I told him, I said, man, you got to open yourself up to that. I said, you know, if you want to pray for something, pray to be, you know, calm, frank, and open, and then you will be gratified with it. Mm-hmm. You know, and, you know, when we talk about the freedom of bondage of self, you know, like, I mean, man, it's, you know, like I hear it like a lot, right? I got freedom in the fifth step, you know? And then the big one too is like, I get freedom in the ninth step, you know, like I'm free. And I'm like, man, you know, for me, like if I look at it, man, I get freedom when all of a sudden I'm telling my, you know, my men's stories, or I'm telling my stories, how I got through something. And then those guys have that experience. Because what I happen to find out is that everything that I've gone through is not garbage. The things that I've done are not garbage. It's all a pot of gold, right? And the thing is, that's what Alcoholics Anonymous is for me. It's a spiritual recycling center. And once it becomes useful, and then all of a sudden, man, I'm going to tell you what, and then that's just now I can like talk about whatever horror show and we can all laugh about it like they're talking about. So I'm praying for them. I hope it goes well. I'll probably get a text about 10 o'clock and then a phone call shortly after, but we'll see how it goes. But I guess that's it. Thanks.
All right. Thanks, Mark. All right. Section 5, page 78. Most alcoholics owe money. We do not dodge our creditors. Telling them what we are trying to do, we make no bones about our drinking. They usually know it anyway, whether we think so or not. Nor are we afraid of disclosing our alcoholism on the theory it may cause financial harm. Approached in this way, the most ruthless creditor will sometimes surprise us. Arranging the best deal we can, we let these people know we are sorry. Our drinking has made us slow to pay. We must lose our fear of creditors no matter how far we have to go, for we are liable to drink if we are afraid to face them. Okay, Mary Beth.
Thank you. I didn't have a ton of financial reparations to make when I was doing my ninth step, but I would say that, you know, kind of going back to the idea of, again, like, tying spiritual matters to material matters. And, you know, that again, it makes sense that if I can't shove, you know, my shame in the closet and pretend like it's not there, like I can't shove my debts in the closet and pretend like they're not there, right? They're boogeymen, right? And I love hearing the stories of people in Alcoholics Anonymous talking about, you know, when they got serious about like getting their finances in order and working with creditors and working on, you know, payment plans and debts and stuff. You hear stories all the time of people who faced really scary stuff and stopped pretending like it wasn't there and in learning to live within their means. And it's one of those things that, you know, it's a really easy way, I think, to not be free, right? Is to live outside of, my means. And so it makes sense that in part of our house cleaning, as we're in the ninth step, that we're encouraged to really stop and take a look and see like, where do I need to clean it up? Right. Cause it's going to weigh me down. It's going to cause that fear in my chest. Right. Because I'm owned somewhere else. Right. There are people that can call me on my debts. And, so it's just such good, wise counsel that again, it's, I'm sure, incredibly scary to have to call and, own up to it. But I would imagine on the other side of it, you know, as Merv shared earlier, like, I mean, I can either face it and deal with the fear, or I can live in fear, which is never fun, not bad.
All right, Merv.
Right on. Thanks for sharing, Mary Beth. And I don't know, you know, like, I think about it, you know, like, you know, we all come in with our own unique but not unique operating system, right? Like, this is how I used to operate in all my affairs. And man, when I was drinking, man, I was a thief. I bartended, you know, I did a bunch of stuff in the restaurant industry, man, I stole more money from people. I've shoplifted. I mean, I was a, and just because I came into AA, you know, and I make a couple of my amends, man, that operating system, it takes a little bit of time for me to change how I roll, right? And what's the old adage, you know, if you have an alcoholic horse thief and you take away the alcohol, you still got the horse thief, you know? And and I was, you know, like, and I'll tell you, like, how it builds up the justification for this, right? And Ryan knows the story. And is that, like, whenever I got sober, my first day of sobriety was the day I got fired from a law firm. And I wasn't a lawyer or anything, but I handled all their money, surprisingly enough, right? So, like, the thing is like, you know, my first job of sobriety is I go to work for a Greek diner as a dishwasher. And I'm like, man, what am I doing here? I used to handle million-dollar checks. And now I'm like, I don't even know how to wash dishes. But, you know, they soon promote me to waiter. And, you know, and I'm like walking around in this job for 4 years, and I hate every minute of it because, you know, this is the boss and all these things, like, you know what, they don't give me. And the thing is how I started to justify this theft was this. I'm like 2-3 years sober. And it's just like, hey, you know what? I pay for my sandwich, but I'm taking that piece of baklava for my dessert. And, you know, next thing I know, it's every day I'm taking a piece of baklava. And now it's like 2 months later, and I'm like owning up to my sponsor that I owe my boss for 60 pieces of baklava. And anybody who, you know, ever knew like Greeks, they only have like two emotions, love and rage, you know, and I'm going to get fired, you know? And he's just like, well, you better go and ask your girlfriend first, you know? So the mother of my son, I went and I said, you know, I might get fired if I pay back for all this baklava. And she's just like, I don't want a drunk boyfriend, and my son doesn't want a drunk father. Make the amends. And I was like, God. And so I pull him aside, you know, and I make the amends. And he's just like, you know, calls me a bunch of Greek names. But he's just like, I pay him the money. And he's just like, okay. I steal again, like next week. And I'm like, hey, I owe you for two more pieces of baklava. I, you know, don't ask. And he's just like, okay. So the thing is like, you know, I tell this story, right? Because it gets a laugh, right? You know, because I'm like slow. I'm a slow alcoholic, right? But the thing is like where this comes into play is like, it was about 7-8 years of being sober. And I share this story and everybody in the meeting's laughing. Oh, Merv, you're such a goofball, you know? And this guy comes up to me after the meeting. He's just like, hey, can I talk to you? And I'm like, yeah, what's up? He's like, just in case you haven't noticed, for the last 4 years, I'm the guy in the meeting that's not laughing at your damn baklava. And I'm like, what's going on? He's like, I've been stealing from work and I don't know how to. And I was just like, and we had a long conversation. We had another long. And I sent him back to a sponsor. I'm like, you need to make this right with him, with your sponsor. So like, you know, the knucklehead Merv move, you know, like, you know, it's funny, since that day, I haven't like stolen anything in sobriety, but the thing is like, once again, you know, it always goes back to like all this. And anyways, I guess that's it. Thanks.
Thanks, Merv. Okay. Our last reading, section 6, page 79. Although these reparations take innumerable forms, there are some general principles which we find guiding, reminding ourselves that we have decided to go to any lengths to find a spiritual experience. We ask that we be given strength and direction to do the right thing, no matter what the personal consequences may be. We may lose our position or reputation or face jail, but we are willing. We have to be. We must not shrink at anything. All right, Mary Beth.
Thanks so much. So again, what amends are going to look like for each and every person is obviously different, right? We've got our alcoholisms come out in different ways. So that's where we get these innumerable forms, right? So but I love just this reminder that, but as my own individual self, I decided to go to any length to find a spiritual experience. And so I have to like ask God to help me be brave, right? I have to ask God to remove the fear and show me who you'd have me be and who you'd have me help. Because I don't want to live in this mess anymore, right? And I've gone and done all this work, pulled all the junk out of the closet. I've sorted through it all, like determined that what trash needs to be let go of. I've determined, you know, what I'm going to keep. Like I'm ready to give it away. Like I see the repairs I need to make in my house. Like I'm willing to make the repairs in my house. I actually have started to make the repairs in my house, right? Because I want to live here. I want this life and I want to be okay. And like, it's work, right? And it's scary sometimes and there may be consequences, but I can't shrink at anything, right? And that's like just such a gift that, as I said earlier, we don't have to do it alone. And I'm so grateful for that because I don't know that I wouldn't have, right? Me against the world was me drunk, right? But me with good sponsorship, me with strong fellowship and me with a higher power, I was able to write that scary list of paper, that 8-step, you know, like it's just a piece of paper. It's just a list of names. And I think sometimes because of the fear of what the ninth step is, we don't want to write the eighth step. But the eighth step is just a list of names, right? And it's a list of names that I can say beside every single one. I'm not willing. No, never. Nope, nope, nope. I can write that, right? That's okay. But I've still done the eighth step if I've made my list. And, you know, and in my experience, as much as I didn't want to do that, once that was done, lo and behold, the willingness started to come, right? And the still small voice started to tell me when and how and who. And, you know, and I got through it. I got through the hard thing, and we can do hard things, right? And in my experience, I'm so glad I did, because I did get my house in order enough. And by the gift of, you know, 10, 11, and 12, I've been able to keep it. And stuff still piles up. There's still spiritual laundry to do. There's still spiritual dishes, like, right? There's still spiritual renovations that I have to do sometimes. But like, on the whole, it's a beautiful life. And I'm so glad to be here. And I'm just really grateful that the last thing I'll say, you know, if you're new, you're probably like, what are these people talking about? Right. But the steps are in order for a reason, right? And the experience of many of us who have gotten sober is that we did the steps in order, and we did the steps with a sponsor, and we did the steps, you know, working out of this book. And doing it that way is doable, and it's totally worth it. And I'll pass.
Thanks, Mary Beth. Merv?
That was awesome. Every time I read this paragraph, I always, like, if I'm reading this paragraph with somebody, I always segue into the history of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, the fact that Alcoholics Anonymous's anniversary is based upon the willingness that Dr. Bob displayed, you know, following through with his eight step list. So Alcoholics Anonymous is actually, you know, founded on the eight step, you know, and the follow through of that, you know. And I always think of Dr. Bob, right? Like, that was always his argument, right? Like, he never wanted to go back and make amends because, you know, that he might give himself away, you know, and I'm sure, like, you know, everybody already knew it anyway. And, you know, and so, like, whatever is holding me back from that, you know, it's just like Dr. Bob, like, if I think about it, you know, when in the book, whenever it talks about, you know, that we find God in the last analysis, right? That means that sometimes I got to try everything else first, right? And, you know, just like what me holding up, you know, like 5 years to finish my financial amends, right? I had to try everything else. But the thing is, like, man, my alcoholism is going to demand treatment one way or another. And at the end of the day, you know, unless I conform to these spiritual principles, what's going to happen is, you know, I'm going to get it for an alcoholic. So, you know, sometimes, you know, I gotta ask God to set aside the things I think, feel, and believe in order to follow through with something, and then trust God that the outcome will be better than I can think of. And that's what happened for me, you know, whether it was like, you know, the old list you make on your first day of sobriety, or it was like, this is never going to work out. But once again, you know, after trying everything, you know, everything that I can, and then it always comes back to one thing, you know, it's either chasing this spiritual experience to maintain my sobriety, or else it's staying in the zip code of it. So at least I can be happy and sober at the same time, even at 15. So anyways, it's been a great meeting. I appreciate y'all having me. Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks, Merv. And thanks to you too, Mary Beth. All right, this will end the sharing portion of the meeting. Time for the seventh tradition. David, would you put up the seventh tradition page? Thank you, sir. All right. The seventh tradition states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their inner group or central office, local services, district area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Our common welfare, a word about safety. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meetings can take place. And announcements, are there any AA-related announcements?
I got one real quick. Alcoholic David, thank you both for coming to share tonight. That was amazing. Yeah, this Wednesday, the fourth Wednesday of December, will be the last in the series that District 14 is putting on. We're doing a concept every month. So this coming Wednesday will be Concept 12. We're going to have, oh my gosh, I just blanked on her name. Michaeline. Woohoo! Michaeline is a past delegate from Virginia. She's going to come in and talk for about 20 or 30 minutes on Concept 12, and then we'll have a Q&A after that. And that'll cap the series for 2021 on the concepts. And you can find all that information at tidewaterintergroup.org, 7 p.m. this Wednesday. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, David. For anyone that may not know, Simple Actions is a home group. If you are interested in joining our home group or in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. And home group members, please raise your hands. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, we will be available here after we close the meeting. Please feel free to talk to any of us, or you can email info@simpleactions.net as well. And in closing, again, thanks to you. Thanks, Mary Beth and Merv, both of you, for sharing this evening. And I'll unmute everybody after the Lord's Prayer so that everybody has a chance to say thank you. And David, I'll go ahead and ask you if you will read a vision for you.
Happy to. Alcoholic David, our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you until then.
All right. Thank you, David. Okay. Last but not least, the closing with the Lord's Prayer, and then I hope everybody will thank our two panelists for this evening for their sharing. Our Father.
Our Father.
Who art in heaven.
Lord in heaven.
Hallowed be thy name.
Thy kingdom come.
Thy will be done.
On earth as it is in heaven.
Give us this day our daily bread.
Our daily bread.
And forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil.
And is the kingdom,
the power, and the glory,
forever and ever.
Amen.
Amen. Woohoo! Thank you both.
Thanks,
that was amazing.
Thank you.